And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here, Move the Sticks, and let me be the first, Buck, to welcome you back to the United States of America.
Hey, how about that? Man,
long how was your trip, man?
Man, it was great. It was an outstanding trip, outstanding learning experience for me, not only from a professional standpoint, but from a personal standpoint, to go over to Europe for the first time and kind of see how everything goes. But I think we'll have a lot of conversations about some of the stuff that they're doing, because they have these academies popping up. They have things that they're doing with the International Player Pathway Program, where they got more players that they believe will come over and make an impact. We saw Jordan Mayalte make the Philadelphia Eagles, was a drafted player. They think they're more in the pipeline. So kind of exciting to see what is going on over there as they begin to kind of catch on to American football.
That's fun, man. I love it. It's the assignment you were given to go over there, really, it was all kind of a ruse. I mean, you say you go over there to work for Sky Sports and cover the NFL, but really you're going over there to try and infiltrate the around the NFL stranglehold on Europe. How'd that go?
I felt like we made some progress. I think with a little more time, we can have some more inroads. But I do believe there's a little fan base that wants more Move the Stick stuff over there. So we got to figure out how to serve the people.
All right. I'm thinking, I don't know, they have like the Operation Christmas Child, where you put the toys in the shoeboxes and you bring them to kids in countries. I think we could do like a Move the Sticks kind of a giveaway. Keychains or something?
I'm sure we can come up with something, you know, over there and
we'll
do
buy
something
love.
Big.
We will buy love. There's no shame in our game.
Move the Sticks footballs. We'll get them just some footballs. That's
you,
all we
Kent.
Need. Yeah.
There we go. We'll get that done. Well, we got a fun show. We're going to get into this Monday night game, which was intriguing, good word for it there. Saints and Panthers, low-scoring affair. We're going to get our thoughts on that one. I've got something I want to jump into with Buck, and Buck, I haven't even told you all about this yet, so I'm springing it on you, but had a fun conversation with Gus Bradley from the Chargers, talking about what he looks at in terms of statistics to kind of gauge where they are defensively. A lot of times we cherry-pick stats from the outside and in the media world. Well, what do the coaches pay attention to? What matters to them? I'll get into that with you, and we can kind of run through and talk about some of these playoff teams and how they would fare in those numbers. And then we're going to have a fun guest. We've got Greedy Williams, one of the top cornerback prospects in the draft out of LSU. He's going to join us. We'll get a chance to visit with him as well. So it's going to be a fun show today, Buck.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think there's a lot to talk about. So why don't we just get right into it?
Jump in.
On the Monday night game. I think the big thing for me, the New Orleans Saints and the Carolina Panthers game, it's amazing how all of these high-flying offenses at the beginning of the year are slowly but surely kind of coming back to the pack, and teams are beginning to find a way to slow them down. A New Orleans Saints team you talk about this team that was putting 40 burgers on everybody. They were held to 12 points against the Carolina Panthers. And even though it was a great win for them because their defense showed up, I do believe you're beginning to see teams are beginning to kind of figure out how to slow down and contain the Saints and the Rams and the Chiefs. And so the teams that are ultimately going to win and go to the winner's circle are going to be the teams that are the most well-balanced in terms of their offense, their defense, and their special teams. You're going to have to be clicking on all three cylinders to be able to win these games as we get into the postseason.
You know, I'm glad you kind of mentioned that, because this was the thought that I had going in my head. You've been a MMA guy, right, Buck?
Mm-hmm.
You've paid attention to MMA,
yep.
You know, going back a while. Do you remember before everybody became kind of a well-rounded fighter in the early days of, like, the UFC, they would introduce the fighters and say, out of, you know, Orange County, he's a wrestler. He's a wrestling background. He's going to be fighting up against this man from – he's got a judo background in Japan. And then eventually everybody kind of became well-rounded. But they would always say this is what their specialty is. Like when I think of the Saints, the encouraging thing is it's not just this is the – you know, this is the passing team, the New Orleans Saints. Like, no. They can run the ball. They're a defensive team now. They can generate some turnovers. They can generate a pass rush. You don't want to be the team that's introduced as just a passing team. That's it. That's what you do. You're a passing team with nothing else. Because, again, it's you get in the cage, so to speak. You can't just be one-dimensional like that. You're not going to be able to win the whole thing.
No, you're not going to be able to win the whole thing. And, it's so great that you brought that up, because I do believe, like, early in the year, we're kind of seduced into thinking that the teams that are throwing the ball all over the yard are the teams that are going to be the same ones that are at the top of the league at the end of the year. And we're seeing the game kind of changes as we get into November, December. We're seeing the running game kind of return to prominence. We're seeing more teams kind of play a little more power football, a little more conservative in terms of the way they're trying to control time of possession and kind of help their defense be at its best in the fourth quarter by not exposing them to too many plays. And with the Saints, I do believe the Saints are kind of like the perfect team if you could build a perfect team in terms of how to play NFL football. They have a franchise quarterback in Drew Brees. They have a powerful running game with two running
backs.
Good
offensive line, too.
Good offensive line that can move people all the ball. They have a dominant receiver in Michael Thomas, but they have another playmaker who comes out the backfield in Alvin Kamara. And then on defense, they're beginning to heat up the pass rush, but most importantly, they can create turnovers. And so when you're looking at all the teams that are heading into the tournament, man, I kind of have to say that the Saints have to be the favorite based on how they're constructed and how they're playing going into the postseason.
And, again, we use this phrase on the show all the time, Buck, never quit on talent. And once again, we see another example of that. Eli Apple, one man's trash, another man's treasure.
Yep.
Playing good ball for the Saints, Buck, after coming over in that trade.
You know, and I think the thing that we can't overlook, they put him in a secondary with his former
Ohio
college
State.
Teammates.
It's Ohio State secondary.
It's all Ohio State guys. Von Bell, Marshawn Lattimore. Look, those guys, I think we could say, they looked up to Eli Apple. Eli Apple was the first round of the crew, and Marshawn Lattimore was the young pup playing behind or alongside Eli Apple. And sometimes you have to be surrounded by your guys to feel comfortable. And I think what we're seeing each and every week, Eli Apple's confidence is coming back. So now he's beginning to make plays. And now they have basically two first-round corners sitting on the aisle, and Von Bell controlling the middle. To go with this pass rush that's emerging, the New Orleans Saints look like a completely different defense than the one that started the season. I think that's a credit to their personnel staff. I think it's a credit to Sean Payton for being aggressive and making sure they made the moves. And then Dennis Allen and his crew for putting it all together once they got Eli Apple into the fold.
What do you think about what's going on there with Carolina? I mean, obviously Cam Newton is not healthy.
I think he's hurt. And I think it's obvious. Like, just looking at how the Carolina Panthers were playing. I mean, as recently as maybe week 8, week 9, we're talking about this is the best that we've seen Cam Newton play throughout his career in North Turner's system. Something happened where he's not running the ball. He can't throw the ball effectively. He's having a tough time throwing it beyond the checkdowns.
It's uncomfortable. Christian McCaffrey. Watch.
And then when you look at his throwing motion and form, there's something that's going on. And I think he kind of let the cat out of the bag in his post-game press when he talked about all of the stuff that he's trying to get done on his throwing shoulder. I think it's obvious the Carolina Panthers' playoff hopes went up in flames when Cam Newton was hurt and he wasn't able to play like Super Cam, because then you see the warts on their team when he's not able to be the extraordinary playmaker that he has been for them for years in the pocket.
Yeah, it wasn't tough to figure out that he's not right. Now, he's never going to be the most accurate quarterback in the NFL. That's not who he is. But when you look at how he was playing early in the year when he was healthy, you start going through the games, Buck. I'm looking at his game log here. Let's see. Starting with the third game, 68% completion, 83.3, 67, 79, 76, 72. I mean, he was completing a lot of balls, man. He was playing probably some of the best football of his career in terms of being accurate and putting the ball where he wanted to put it. But, man, it just has fallen apart a little bit for him here as he's lost his health.
It has fallen apart for them. And I think the bigger thing, so here's the decision that the Carolina Panthers will have to make at the end of the season. What do they want to do with Ron Rivera? Because you're hearing some conversation like, oh, well, maybe they'll move on from him. The only thing that I'm going to caution all of these teams that are thinking about moving on from their coaches, and some of them are deserved, some of them maybe you can question, I don't know what the pool of candidates looks like this year in terms of sure things. And so yeah. I think what you need to do is you need to weigh the high watermark of the current coach that you have versus – man, the potential that you think these other guys are going to have. Because remember, there's a bit of a transition when it comes to stepping from a coordinator spot or position job to the head coach. And we have shown increasingly that we don't have the patience to wait for people to make that transition. If you're a new coach, you got to hit the ground running. So if I'm the Panthers and some of these other franchises, is it better to stay the course with who I have and maybe make some changes, be it players-wise, coach-wise, or should I look outside and see if I can find a new voice to really change the franchise?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what they decide to do there, not only on the field but in the front office as well. Are they going to keep Marty Herney? Are they going to keep Marty Herney and Coach Rivera, or are they going to clean them both out? I mean, there's decisions to be made there about the future of the Carolina Panthers. I think one thing everybody would agree on is you got to find a way to get Cam Newton healthy. Getting him out there when he's not healthy is not good for anybody.
No, it's not good for anybody. So that's why I think it's a no-brainer to shut him down for the moment. Like, don't allow him to get hurt. You want to make sure that he is able to go into the offseason, get fully rehabbed, so in 2019 we can start over, we can build it around him. You're not going to the playoffs, so it's really, to me, there's no benefit to playing him. Play some of the other guys. Try and get ready for next year. Try and do some self-evaluation as you begin to think about how you want to build your team for 2019 and beyond.
All right, I want to get into a little bit of discussion I had with Gus Bradley the other day with the Chargers. And some of the stuff will seem pretty common sense, Buck, but I've got a project, so it's kind of like a homework assignment I'm giving myself here because I want to put together a tabulation and see what we can learn from this. But I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I was talking to him about, you know, when I'm watching tape getting ready to call a game, the things that I like to watch. So I'll watch, and even with draft prospects, we've talked about this before, I always like to watch quarterbacks. I'll watch their third and six plus reel. So I just try and eliminate a lot of the bubble screens and tunnel screens. I want to see them, you know, teams know you're going to throw the football. You got to throw it, and you've got to go down the field a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do they execute? How do they see the field? All that jazz. So that's what I look for in college. When I'm watching these NFL teams to get ready for these games, Buck, I'll look at, you know, how they do on third down period. I'll look at what they do in the red zone, different things there. And then I'll look at sack reels, turnover reels, and try and see what I can glean from, you know, the teams by watching those cut-ups. So I was talking to Coach Bradley about it. He was really fascinating because he said, and this goes back to Pete Carroll. A lot of this stuff you're going to remember from going to SC all those years and talking to Pete. You can tell that's where he got his philosophy. But he said each week they like to look at how they did the previous week by looking at these six factors. I don't know if they call it – he had a name for it. I don't know if it's the big six, the sweet six, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But they would evaluate themselves and how they did in these areas. And then when they would look ahead to the opponent they were getting ready to play, they would look at how they were on the other side in these six areas. And this is what they paid attention to. All right, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, stop the run. Number two, eliminate explosives. So you're talking about runs – of 10-plus completions of, 20-plus is what we're calling explosive plays, affect the quarterback, sacks, hits, hurries, move them around. Win on third down, own the red zone, which is something when if you've watched the Chargers play this year, they've been outstanding. They've had so many key stops down in there in the tight red zone. So own the red zone. And then lastly, and this is the Pete Carroll phrase that I know you've heard a million times, it's all about the ball. So turnovers, you know, are you generating turnovers? So each week they kind of, it's almost, and I don't know, they give themselves a letter grade on these, but how are you doing in those six factors? Those are the most important factors. And I was saying, what happens if you haven't done, you know, well in certain areas? Well, then they can emphasize it more that week. You know, hey, we struggled in the red zone this week. So that week in practice, we're going to focus more in that area. We're not getting off the field on third down. Okay. Let's identify who we have on the field in our sub package and how we're deploying them. He was talking about early in the season, they had, you know, played the Rams and the Chiefs. They gave up too many explosive plays, and explosive runs were an issue. So they can change the alignment of their front in terms of how they're playing. You know, maybe we need to stop trying to get upfield and let's play a little bit more head up, have to do a little bit more dirty work with our front to be able to slow that down. I mean, they were on pace for a record number of explosive plays, and then they've cut that way down to be one of the better teams in the NFL since they've made that adjustment. So I just think it's a great filter for defenses. So my thought was, and I've just started work on this, I haven't finished it yet, was to take the 12 playoff teams, right, as it would stand right now, and then take the 12 playoff teams would be in a list down the left, and then across the top on the right, we put the six different categories, which I would actually make seven because I would split explosive into passes and runs because that's the way you have to sort it statistically. And then where they rank in all those, and then like we kind of do with our golf analogy, right? Low score wins. So if we go through those six categories, instead of saying this is the best defense in the NFL because of points allowed or yards allowed, maybe it's a combination of all these different areas.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot to unpack right there in what you talk about, Gus Bradley shared with you. And I think what is interesting to me, and I've had this conversation via Twitter, I've had this conversation with coaches in the league about defensive ball. The number one priority, even in what people perceive to be a passing league, is stop the run.
Isn't that
fun? It never changes.
Number one.
It never changes. It is stop the run. I am doing a thing where I'm writing about the Indianapolis Colts, Matt Eberflus, and the great job that he has done with their thing. The number one thing that he talks about, stop the run. And I think what I want to unpack before we get into this thing, The reason why stopping the run is so important in the minds of defensive coordinators, it is much easier to defend a one-dimensional offense, an offense that you know has to pass, because you can then set your defense to stop the pass. The hardest thing is when you're dealing with a team that is balanced and they're in those mixed down situations, meaning they're in third and three, they're in third and four, they're in second and five, where you don't know if they're going to run or pass. It's not a heavy tendency either way. And so for Gus Bradley to talk about stopping the run first and then eliminating the explosive plays is perfect to me, because you want to stop the run, so then the explosive plays in the passing game come off what? They typically come off play action.
Play action.
You want to be able to ignore the threat of the run fake to be able to stay deep. So it works hand in hand. It is just interesting that even in this era where we talk about the passing game, defensive coordinators are still deeply rooted to the fact that I have to stop the run so I can force them to play that I want to play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've talked about how the college game and how the style is different now, and the expectations and the goals need to be different because of the high scoring and the spread and the way the offense are functioning, where we've said it, what, turnovers in red zone. I mean, never been more important than they are now. Being able to force threes instead of sevens is huge. And so really focusing a lot of your time in the offseason, in training camp, during the week of practice, and just drilling in red zone defense, that space gets condensed. Can you get a stop? Can you get off the field? That is huge. It's been huge in the college game for a while now. Now we've seen that carry over to the NFL. He said he used to have his target, and I can't remember exactly the number, but I want to say he said when he was in Seattle when they won the Super Bowl, they limited their number of explosive plays allowed. I think he said it was like in the like 80s or something like that, like 70s, 80s in that range. And he said now with the way the rules are and offenses have exploded, now you kind of put your goal more at like 100. You kind of want to be around 100. And he was saying like early in the season, after a couple games against those offenses, like, we were on pace to give up like 140, 150. He's like, we've got to change something here. We've got to figure this thing out. And then he did a nice job of making the adjustments necessary, and they've played much better. But I think it's like every time you go to the doctor, they check your heart rate. You've got to constantly, as a team, as an offense, as a defense, every week check your heart rate, see where you are and what needs to be done lifestyle-wise or scheme-wise, personnel-wise, to be able to get back on track.
I think what you were able to do is, and I'm glad you did it, you kind of pulled back the curtain a little bit on how NFL teams think. I think on the outside, we all think that the way your team starts at the beginning of the year is the way that your team stays, and that is not true. The reason you see kind of the ebbs and flows throughout the season is because the more games are played, the more everyone has an understanding of who you are. And the good teams are able to, midway through the season, look exactly at what they put on tape and figure out, okay, this is what we are. We thought that we were going to come in and we were going to be able to be a passing team or a running team, but we can't do what we want to do. So the best way for us to win going forward is to play this way. So a team like the Baltimore Ravens, when they put Lamar Jackson in, they've changed their style, and it has worked for them. With Gus Bradley talking about defense and, you know, going through this each week and then knowing what to emphasize and practice, whether it's we need more reps on third down or we need to really focus on our red zone defense because we can't stop people in between the 20s, so let's get good at stopping people when they're going in and make them kick threes. It is always an evolution when it comes to building a team. Gus Bradley just let us know how his team is evolving from a defensive standpoint, but I think it kind of gives us a general indicator on how all of these coaches view their teams and how they're beginning to make adjustments as they head into the postseason.
Yeah, I think, look, if you're coaching, you're coaching Pop Warner or whatever, I could see how you'd say, okay, every Monday we do this, every Tuesday we do this, we have this many periods of practice, and we're going to devote this number of periods to this every, and we do the same thing over and over again every week, and it's consistency, and that's this. No. That's not it. You have to be able to take the pulse and figure out where do we need more work. Okay, we're struggling this area. We got to devote more time to that. We need to devote more meeting time to it. We need to devote more practice time to it. It needs to get communicated that we've got to get better in this area. And so the practice time is not getting any longer. It's a pie. You've just got to change how you're dividing up that pie in terms of how you're spending your time, Buck.
You know, DJ, and I can tell you just from firsthand experience in terms of coaching this year and being a coordinator and trying to figure out how to devote your time, you get what you emphasize. And so when Gus is talking about, look, we study each Monday what we've done the previous Sunday, and then we figure out what areas we need to do. And then he makes sure that the practice script matches up to what the points of emphasis are for that week. So whether it's turnovers, we need more turnover drills or turnover periods before practice or during practice or the red zone. Hey, let's lengthen out our red zone period and we'll cut down our first and second down period. It is making sure that you're giving your players enough reps that they feel good in the areas that you really want to get better at, and make sure that you have kind of buttoned up as you're going into these critical games down the end of the season.
And also, you know, one last thing, we'll button it up here, but like, you know, okay, it's about what the other team does well. So you're getting ready to play a game against a team that doesn't give up many sacks or pressures. Okay, let's try and put a little bit more into our pass rush plan this week. Let's spend a little bit more time in one-on-ones just to kind of hone in a little bit on what we're doing pass rush-wise, because we can't allow a guy to sit back there and not get affected. So that we need to maybe throw in a couple more pressure packages we haven't shown yet. But you've got to find a way to move quarterbacks in this league. If you leave quarterbacks alone, you're going to lose.
Absolutely. And I'm going to kind of transition this conversation, but it's the same kind of conversation. I don't know how much time you've had to check out the L.A. Rams and Jared Goff. But in the last three games, Jared Goff is really, really struggling.
He has one touchdown, seven
interceptions. Completion has come way down. The last two games, what has kind of stood out is the Rams haven't used a lot of play action pass. They've been under 25% of their dropbacks in terms of using play action pass, and he has struggled. I think what Sean McVay is doing, and I think this is the biggest challenge that Sean McVay has had in his young coaching life as the head coach of the Rams. He has to now figure out, what do I do now that the rest of the league has seemingly caught up to us schematically and they've begun to figure out my quarterback? And so I am curious to see what is he going to do going forward.
What's the next step?
Because it's been a magic carpet ride for the Rams for most of it offensively. And now we've kind of hit a bump in the road when it comes to the quarterback. And so what you're really hoping when you get a great play caller is that the play caller can come up with some magic dust to help the quarterback out, because the quarterback is struggling. So what does Sean McVay do to help Jared Goff get back into a rhythm? Teams are sitting back. They're taking away the explosives like you talked about. They're not giving him that. They're tightening up in the red zone, so they're not scoring the touchdowns that they're accustomed to doing. And he has turned over the ball. So three of the six things that Gus Bradley hit on in terms of being kind of high priorities on defense, the Rams have been struggling. So what does Sean McVay do? And I don't know if you had a chance to look at Jared Goff and what your thoughts are on him right now.
Yeah, look, he's been moved off his spot a little bit. His feet have gotten away from him at times, no doubt. To me, it just – you talked about the lack of explosives. I think over the last three games when I looked it up, it's three lowest yards per attempt of the season, each of those three games. So they have not been able to get anything over the top. When you can't stretch out a defense, the entire field shrinks. And that's tough. It's tough to play quarterback when that happens. Now, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing in terms of, okay, you're not getting over the top. Why aren't you getting over the top? Well, maybe because you're not running the ball as effectively so they can play high safeties. If you can't run the ball effectively and force them to drop down an extra defender, it's tough to get over the top. So to me, the answer would be, okay, we are going to come out, we are going to commit to the run game, and we're going to get that going, we'll get that cranked up, and then guess what? Once we get that going a little bit, then it's going to shrink. They're going to pull coverage down, and we're going to be able to expand the field a little bit. Stop playing half-court basketball. We'll get back to playing full court.
Yeah, you know, and I think the funny thing, and I think sometimes defensive coordinators have been able to use the ego of an offensive coordinator against him. Sean McVay has been able to dial up all these cute and sexy plays. They've been able to really kind of be the darling of the media in terms of the way they play offensive football. The one thing that has come out when you look at the numbers, Todd Gurley, when Todd Gurley doesn't get the ball more than 15 times, their record is, I mean, it falls below 500.
You're talking about carries, not touches, right?
Yeah, I'm not talking about touches.
I'm
talking about carries. When he gets 15 or more carries, I want to say they're 20-2. When he gets under that, they're 2-4, 2-5, 2-6, somewhere in there. And so for me, and I think everyone has to understand when we look at the game, all teams are not necessarily quarterback driven. When I look at the Rams, Todd Gurley to me is the guy that is the focal point of their offense. He should be the focal point. I like their receivers, but I think if we had a real conversation about what letter grade to put on their wide receivers, I think their receivers are probably B, B pluses in terms of Brandon Cooks and Robert Woods. And so when you don't have A-level receivers and you don't necessarily have maybe an A-level quarterback, it is hard to lean on the passing game. The one guy that I know that is an A-plus player is Todd Gurley. And so as they try and clean up what's going on with them, I think Sean McVay has to think players, not plays. My best player is Todd Gurley. I need to get the ball to Todd Gurley as much as I can, and then the rest of the guys will fall in line once he's established and the defense has to pay more attention to him.
One more random thought, and then we can move on and then bring on Greedy Williams to talk to him here. But you remember Coach Billick when he would come on and talk about building your receivers like a
yes.
basketball team?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it got me thinking because just over the last couple of weeks, you know, think about what we saw early in the season from Tyreek Hill. Now he's
yep.
a little bit nicked up, but not quite the same guy. So to me, when you look at a team like the Rams, Brandon Cooks, right? Doesn't have the most size, but he's explosive.
Small.
So
yeah.
so later in the season now,
they get worn down.
All that speed starts to slow down. The size, you don't have quite that size, you wear it down a little bit. Guess what? You know who had a good game for the Philadelphia Eagles against the Rams the other night?
Alshon Jeffrey.
What do you think Alshon Jeffrey could run right about?
Oh, 4.8.
4.8. But guess what? When you're 6'3 plus, you're 6'3 plus. And you can go make plays above the rim, contested catches. You don't have to run away from anybody. I just think late in the season, when you start to kind of wear down a little bit, that you know, look, your nickname's a stinking cheetah. I mean, that's what Tyreek Hill's nickname is. I mean, some of that speed can wear down a little bit. Size doesn't wear down. I'm not saying you want a bunch of big, slow guys all over the field. That's not what I'm saying. You need some speed. But you got to have some size, too. That's nice to be able to use that at this time of year.
It does matter. I mean, you continue to talk about, like, DJ, you and I are talking about in the team-building business and what we ideally want to build a Super Bowl champion. And what you have to do is, we talked about the Saints, you have to have the ability to play different styles because the way football is played at the beginning of the season, it changes later in the year. And as we're seeing, teams like the Tennessee Titans get the ball to Derrick Henry 30-plus times. We're seeing the Baltimore Ravens punish people with the running game. You have to be able to change your style to kind of help your team win games. And so when I'm looking at the Rams, and you're, man, it's such a great point. You talk about the little receivers. The physicality that kind of happens in December and January is different than the beginning of the year. It's a heavyweight fight. You have to be able to withstand those punches. And it brings me back to what Nick Saban said when I was at a pro day years ago. He said, look, there's a reason why we're a bigger team. We believe that football is like a boxing match. There's a reason why you don't put middleweights in the ring with heavyweights. Over time, heavyweights zap all their energy with those body blows, and they knock them out in the later stages. We're seeing these big physical teams that play a certain style, they're able to kind of stand the test of time. That's why they're still standing late in the year.
Yep. I mean, look at Mike Williams and what he's doing coming down the stretch here, big physical wide receiver for the Chargers. It's kind of his time of year.
Even DeAndre Hopkins isn't necessarily a big guy, but he can win the 50. Speed
bigger,
is not
yeah.
his main trait when it comes to how he plays the position. It's being able to set your team up where you have enough of everything where those guys can kind of shift, and now the bigger guy can take the lead when the weather is cold and when the game kind of shrinks because defenses begin to hone in on what you've been able to do for most of the year.
No doubt. That was a fun discussion, Buck. Sprung that one on you, and you brought your A game as always. There's no jet lag with your football knowledge right there. All right, let's bring in a guest here, one of the top cornerback prospects in the upcoming draft class at really DBU. LSU has done a phenomenal job of churning out talent at the corner position, and could not be more excited to have Greedy Williams with us. All right, Greedy, thank you so much, man, for joining the show. First of all, I just got to ask, like, what have you been up to lately? What's going on since you last got on the football field?
Just getting a plan together, making everything stretch out for these few months, leading up to the draft. So me, my agents, my parents, we all just made a big plan, just to everything start on January 3rd, and the plan goes from there.
You know, and thinking about that plan, how tough was it for you to make the decision whether to stay at LSU or to take the opportunity to maybe go into the National Football League based on what you had already accomplished at LSU?
It was tough. Last game, my brothers, I had to, express myself to them, in a worst way possible, let them know I won't, be at the bowl game and things like that. But at the end of the day, family, going to come behind you and support you, 100%. And with my family, we all made a decision, it's time to push forward and, get to the professional level.
What's your goal during training? What are you working on to get yourself ready for the next level?
You know, just footwork, you know, my weight, obviously, and things like that. So just getting stronger, you know, getting faster, you know, staying fit.
Where is your weight right now, Greedy? Where are we at?
I'm like probably around by 182.
Okay. You have a goal there? What you're targeting?
Pushing for 190, but mm-hmm. I mean, if I can stay 185 solid, I'd be straight.
You know, Greedy, you guys have a story tradition. I mean, LSU grads would say that y'all are DBU. There's some other schools that would like to claim that moniker. When you've had so many guys that you've sat in the defensive back room that have gone on to have success in the National Football League, what have you been able to ask those guys are the keys to success in terms of taking your game from a collegian to being a top-notch professional?
You know, just when I first got to LSU, I was already in the room with first-round guys. So, you know, just taking what they was giving me, you know, that's either come in a film room with a pad and pen, you know, just take the small things, like the small notes, you know, that'll make your game better. So now that at the next level, I get to talk to, you know, Tre'Davious White. He one of those guys, you know, call me and just, you know, just mold me into, like, you know, this is a different game. You know, it's our business. So, you know, just get your mind ready, you know, whenever you make that choice and, you know, come up here and, you know, be who you is. So with them, you know, him and Jamal, Tyron reached out. Pat P, you know, all those guys, you know, just came, you know, just and had they, you know, a little sprinkle about the NFL.
Now, I see you get to play in a lot of different techniques when I watch you on tape. I mean, I'll see you in a little bail. I see you in a little trail technique. I see you a little side shuffle. I see your pedal. Like, where are you like playing the most? Where are you the most comfortable technique-wise, position-wise?
Most definitely press. You know, if you get your hands on a guy from the line of scrimmage, you know, it's kind of over with. So, when you press, I think that's my strongest because I got the length, you know, the speed, and you know, the aggressiveness.
You know, who was the biggest challenge for you this year, wide receiver wise? You went up against
this year. I mean, it wasn't really that much of a challenge, but last year I could tell you it was Calvin Ridley, bro. He was nice, you know, from the line of scrimmage on down the field. So that was probably one of my biggest challenges in college football.
You know, and thinking about what DJ had asked you about your technique and the different techniques that you use, when you pop in a tape and you have an opportunity to look at somebody that you want to steal some tips from, who are the guys that you may pattern yourself after?
No doubt. I start with Pat P. You know, just look at Pat P. You know, how he, you know, play the ball down the field. That's what I like about Pat P. Then I go down to Trey White, how he able to be patient at the line. Now I'm watching DJ. You know, Dante Jackson, just watching how he, you know, play with that confidence. So it's a piece that you can get from everybody. Like I said, I get Pat P with the ball skills. I get Trey White with the patience at the line. And I get Dante Jackson with the confidence.
You don't even have to leave your school. All fellow teammates, all alum. You just stay right. Just keep it in the brand. Keep it in the family. I see. I understand how you do it.
That's all you can do.
I love that. When you talk about Dante, now Dante can roll, and we saw that again against the Carolina Panthers on that two-pointer he took back. What can we expect when Greedy puts his hand on the line, when we get to the combine in Indianapolis or your pro day, whenever you decide you want to run your 40, when your hand goes down to the line, what kind of number are we looking at when you hit the tape?
Man, I haven't ran straight in so long, so when I put my hand on that line, it might be like a – with no technique or nothing, it might be like a 4-3.
Oh, okay then. All right. That plays. That'll work. That'll definitely work.
That's something. So one of the things that we like to do, Greedy, is we always like to have people reflect on their high school, college, or their football career. And what would you say has been the biggest highlight of your time playing ball? It could be on the field. It could be off the field. What has been the biggest highlight of what football has kind of allowed you to experience?
I give you both sides. So, you know, I started by default. One of our guys went down, and I went in against BYU, my first college game ever. I was nervous, but, you know, I made a big play. It was an interception, first interception of the year. And that, like, changed my life forever. Like, I never came off the LSU forever again. So that was one of the, you know, highlights of my life, you know, changed everything, you know, my family life, my life, you know, so. And then off the field, I do this thing. Now I'm starting to do this thing. Last year I did this called a back-to-school giveaway. That's what I did last year. So whenever I come home, like in May from college or something, me and my brother, we'll get together and we'll do a giveaway. And last year we did a giveaway, and that was probably one of the greatest moments ever, you know, just off the field, you know, seeing the kids from my community, you know, come support me, you know, and have all the, you know, things that they need for school and able to take pictures, play games, play basketball, you know, just loving on those kids, you know, one of the biggest parts about, you know, off the field when it comes to football. So that's what I took in as a one of my highlights off the field.
Now, we also like, we go through these H's here, so that's kind of like your highlight. But how about if we had to look through your life, just a hardship? Give us an example of something you've been through that's been a challenge in your life that you've been able to kind of come out the other side and overcome.
You know, just sitting on, I remember one day I was walking home from middle school. I saw my mom, you know, just sitting on the porch crying. But she never told us why she was crying. It was me and my brother. She never told us why she was crying. So my sisters come in the room and they tell us, you know, she just found out she got cancer. Middle school. So I'm like it hit me so hard. Like, I just can't think right now. Like, it's like cancer. I didn't see this one of my best friends, mama, die from cancer like that. So it's just like, what I'm supposed to do? So when I go back outside, I'm just like leaning on her car, just looking at her cry, like, it's hurting me inside. So in high school, she used to have to like leave like on a Monday to go get treatment in Monroe, which is like 45 to an hour away from my house. So she'll leave and, you know, go to Monroe. But she never told me and my brother anything about the cancer. Like, still to this day, I don't know anything about it. All I know is she beat it, and, you know, and she's healthy, you know. She's been at every college game, every high school game, every peewee ball game. You know, she never missed a game. So she back and rolling, you know, she healthy, you know. That's one of my hardships.
That is awesome story, man. I'll tell your mother we're excited that she's doing great, man. That is great news. Go ahead, Buck.
I mean, like coming off of that, we just want to know, who is your biggest hero? Who is the person that you look up to the most?
It might sound crazy, but my biggest hero is my daughter. You know, she just changed me from every way of life. You know, me having a bad day, I can just call her, and, you know, she'll say, "Dad, Dad." You know, that'll make my day 10 times better than what I was having. So, I just watch her. You know, just watch her grow and love to, you know, just comfort her whenever I had the time. And, you know, Christmas gonna be big for her this year.
Yeah, that's right. She's going to be loving Christmas this year. No question. Dad's
right.
A pro. I love it. Hey, last two things, and then we're going to let you run here. Number one, I'm looking, you know, Calvary Baptist there in Shreveport. Is that where Doug Williams was coaching when he was coaching? Or sorry, Doug Peterson. Is that where Doug Peterson went and coached? So he ever come
he
back there while you were in school?
No.
Come on, coach.
He left actually like 2 or 3 years before I came. So he was – he franchised it.
last question, and we appreciate your time. Last question, I'm going to let you run. So I started out at Northeast Louisiana University, which is now University of Louisiana Monroe. You just talked about going to Monroe. So you have to answer this one question for me because I never learned the answer. Is it the Pecan Land Mall or is it the Pecan Land Mall? Because I don't know if I ever said it right.
I say pecan.
That's you how go pecan. Okay, pecan.
Yeah, that's
not
it.
Pecan. Pecan.
Yeah,
okay, do you like
pecan.
Do you like the pie?
Yes, no doubt. That's the best pie ever. That's the best pie ever.
I'll tell you what. We've got a deal. We've got a deal with you. You're going to get an official Move the Sticks pecan pie once you get drafted. We're going to deliver it, hand deliver it to you. All right, hey, Greedy, man. Congratulations on your decision and your future. We will see you in Indianapolis at the Combine. We look forward to catching up with you again here soon.
Yes, sir. No problem. I thank y'all.
All right, Buck, what a fun kid to talk to there, and Greedy Williams. Hall of Fame name, by the way. Great name for a corner.
Man, great name, especially when you have the ability to turn the ball over. You have ball skills. You have the size. Like, man, Greedy really works if you're talking about building a brand, particularly as a playmaker.
Yeah, no question. Easy sell there. Easy marketing sell there for Greedy Williams. Well, hey, fun show today, Buck. I got a chance to recap that Monday night game, that low-scoring affair. But I got to be honest with you. I'd love talking with Greedy Williams. My favorite part of the show today might just be our little in-depth discussion we did on kind of where football is right now at this time of the year, and just kind of how you can kind of take the pulse and figure out where teams are right now and what we can expect going forward.
Yeah, man, it was a fascinating discussion. I like the discussion. I like when we have a chance to kind of peel back the onion and have like these State of the Union type talks about where football is whatever.
Philosophy get discussed on
that. That was pretty good.
Good time, man. Hey, go. You deserve a nap. Go get a nap. Try and get you back on the right time zone here. Oh. It's great to have you back, man. I don't know if you – did you hear our nickname for Rhett that we gave him while you were gone?
Oh, what's Rhett's nickname?
He's a PBU. He's our primary backup. If I'm gone, if you're gone, he's kind of the next man up. So we just call him the PBU, not the pass breakup.
He's backup. Moved in. He's moved in. All right.
Yeah, honorary. Shoot, we got path to the draft going to be here before you know it with the
unbelievable.
With all of us here.
Like, man, we got these all-star games coming up, like East-West, senior. I got to get to work, DJ.
I'm so far behind.
I'm so far behind. I got to get to work.
All right, let's get done. Wrap this up, and we'll go start watching some college kids. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys for downloading, subscribing, leaving us a review there on Apple Podcasts. We do appreciate that. It's almost our time of year where we kind of take the mantle on the football podcast platform and say, this is your home. We've got you covered here as we look forward to the postseason, the bowl games, as well as the NFL draft not too far off on the horizon there. That's going to do it for us today on Move the Sticks. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.